Do you see the blue residential area sign and the wooden chairs next to the tree on the opposite side of the street? Go into Schmidtstraße and then just keep walking. From here on, you need a completely different attention. Try to imagine the people behind the walls and windows. Try to sense them. Look closely at the windows, the walls, and the doors. What is happening behind them? Can you hear anything? Turn into that small path a little further to the right. Straight ahead, past the playground. The city consists not only of public spaces, streets, parks, and representative squares or places of work and consumption. Above all, the city also consists of private spaces, flats, terraced and detached houses. These places are neither a stage nor a factory. They are places of reproduction, as they are called in urban research. Here, labor can and must be restored. This is where leisure takes place, where one relaxes and draws strength for work and school. One resides, one lives, one is with oneself. Stay here on the left side. Go on. Over the course of the last century, the reproductive urban areas were mostly functionally and locally separated from the spaces for work and consumption. Separate residential neighborhoods, suburbs, and even entire dormitory towns emerged, monofunctional districts, often correspondingly bleak. Unlike public urban spaces, these spaces are private, intimate, and familiar, for retreat and recreation from the impositions of city life. That is what they are there for. Turn left once here. However, if one follows the statistics, these backsides of the city, the private spaces behind the curtains, are also places of violence, especially for women and children. Contrary to popular belief, it is often not the parks, dark squares, or so-called crime-ridden places that are particularly dangerous. If one follows the figures, it is rather the private households, one's own rooms, where violence and abuse take place. The fact that the deliberate separation of public and private spaces is an instrument of power and creates protective spaces for perpetrators is brought into focus especially by feminist groups. Do you see the paintings on the wall of the house on the right? Walk past them. Then turn right and carefully cross the small street. So, when you walk through the residential districts and suburbs with this gaze, the sometimes picturesque facades and front gardens, as well as worn-out apartment blocks, turn out to be backdrops behind which violence, fear and despair also reign, alongside the family idyll, social home and security. Do you see the car park up ahead? Carefully cross the small road to it and go past the kebab place. Keep walking across the car park, always towards the big modern building. Thank you. Carefully cross the small street to the pavement on the right. Go past the grey building on the left. Cross the little road. Do you see the big playground? Cross the small road again and enter the playground. Walk across the playground. At the back on the right, by the ping pong tables, there is the bench. Maybe you would like to sit or stand there. Do you remember the little playground at Dr. Ruhrplatz? Let's think again about the game and the square. The idea that children in particular need their very own spaces in the city and that their play is meaningful and necessary for development, learning processes and psychological growth only became established less than 100 years ago. At the same time, then as now, it is highly controversial what such places of children's play should actually look like and how and by whom they should be used. Traditionally, playgrounds are planned by landscape architects and only very rarely realized by playground designers or together with residents and future users, which in many playgrounds is noticeable indeed. In their sterility and sobriety, they are sometimes more reminiscent of training and exercise areas than of places for free, shared play and adventure. But there are also newer forms that contrast strongly in design with the often symmetrical and functionalist spaces surrounding them. Their materials are wood rather than metal or plastic. They're more organic and imaginatively planned. But no matter how they are designed, they are embedded in the functional context of the city. The playground is conceived and planned as a reproductive place for recreation and relief for families, where children can act out their urge to move, so it will be easier for them to sit still at school or later at the dinner table. Also, there are places for social interaction and encounters, for playing together and for practicing cooperation. At the same time, of course, they too are bound by rules, building and safety regulations, age restrictions. And they're often difficult or even impossible to use for children with disabilities. These places of children's play are not autonomous zones, but embedded in the regulatory systems and structures of the city, even if that is not all too noticeable. If the city is a theater, the playgrounds are the rehearsal rooms. This is where plays are rehearsed, playfully, children's plays, about the family, the shop, the architecture of a sandcastle, the idea of friendship, the ups and downs of a seesaw, in a constant attempt at balance. In short, in a controlled environment, with their own props and in a public place, children rehearse and learn society. Thus, the playground is also a utopian place. It allows more and even exists for completely different forms of use than the shopping malls of the inner cities. Here, you can use your body in a different way, try it out, hide, daydream, meet, play, or do nothing. Here you have a place to stay, for a time with others. This is a different understanding of city. What a picture. The city as a playground, in a whole new light, under a different design. Now we go on. Follow the pavement next to the playground and turn right at the big road. Walk up the road. The small road. Keep going until you reach the traffic lights. There. This check ends. Street straight ahead. Play the next track on the other side.